My guest today is rather wonderful. She seems to have an ideal life, not a crazy celebrity, super famous life, but a fulfilling, caring, in tune life. She started off with a proper job in financial services. She had children, then retrained as a horticulturist, working with flowers and plants. She now writes heartwarming romantic fiction, and on occasion, she leads a worship in her local church. She is Suzanne Snow, and we're talking about her book and gardening and maybe spirituality today on Radio Gorgeous. Hi, Suzanne. Warm welcome.
Thank you, Josephine. How lovely of you to have me here. Thank you.
Very welcome. So first of all, tell us about your latest book, which I believe is the beginning of the Thorndale series. It's called The Cottage of New Beginnings, which is great to be coming out now.
Yes, it is. It came out as an ebook in September, and the paperback is being released on the 17th of December, which is lovely because it's just in time for Christmas. So although I've very much felt like a published author since the book was released, having it on my shelves feels as the, you know, that little bit more real, if you like. It's set in the Yorkshire Dales, and it is the beginning of a series of three, which, as you've said, it's called Welcome to Thorndale, and this book is The Cottage of New Beginnings, and it's about a young teacher who has a childhood connection to a small village that sustained her through a lonely time, if you like, and she has the opportunity to return, make some new friends, catch up with old ones, and perhaps take a risk on finding love with somebody who stumbles into her life.
Lovely. So the setting was obviously the inspiration for you. Can you tell us about, because there's a picture on your website about the cottage that inspired you. Can you tell us how a setting has inspired your book?
For me, it's usually the first thing that inspires me to write. I can remember clearly with this one, I'd had a little bit of an idea about characters. I'd been writing since I was a child. I'd done short stories and various things, but knew I had this story that was kind of filtering through my mind. And we were walking in the Dales with some friends some time ago. It was Littondale, which is close to Kettlewell. It's around Grassington and that sort of area.
So that's very north, isn't it? Very north.
It
north
is. Yes, yeah. It's close to Skipton as well. That would probably be the closest town. And we were walking, we did a long walk, stopped for a pub lunch, and we walked through these tiny little villages. One was Kettlewell. There's a tiny little hamlet called Hawkswick, which is just a cluster of houses on the river, and Arncliffe, which some of your listeners may have seen on the recent All Creatures Great and Small series. They used the green in Arncliffe for filming some of their scenes, and it was specifically that village that inspired me. Once I have my setting, I start to think about the characters who might live there, who's just arrived, who has that sort of connection, and it almost feels like another character when I'm writing, really, and I find that sort of rural view really inspiring, and the community, really, it's the two together.
So do you come from a rural background or a strong community yourself?
To an extent, yes. I grew up in a small town for the first 10 or 11 years of my life, and then we moved to a more rural community. But what really probably brought me out into the landscape was having horses as being a small child. We just, my mum had one, and then we graduated to a little pony for us, and my parents worked two jobs to make sure that, you know, we could afford this. They were our luxury, if you like. We didn't do holidays so much, and well, certainly not abroad. They were our luxury, really, and they were the thing that got me outside. You know, I feel like I grew up outside in a way, and I'm always grateful for that, because it gave me an understanding that you probably don't see at the time of the seasons and the cycle of the growing year and seeing that change on a farm. So I'm always grateful for that opportunity to be outdoors, and I think that's just something that's really stayed with me.
Wonderful. So did you enter gymkhanas and do pony club and everything?
We didn't do pony club. We did a few little bits and pieces, but nothing very much. It was more about having friends, and we were lucky enough to just kind of disappear for the day. You know, we disappear at 8 o'clock in the morning on our bikes and come back after 10 hours with the horses, you know, at tea time when it was time to feed us, if you like. So not a lot of competition.
It was sort of outside freedom and with nature. It sounds absolutely idyllic.
We were lucky.
Can you tell us about, I know you can't give away too much, but can you tell us about the main characters in The Cottage of New Beginnings?
Annie is somebody who I always saw as being a very warm character, someone who's caring, an only child whose parents lived abroad for since she was about 11, and she ended up at boarding school. So the connection to Thorndale came through her godmother. She ended up, when I planned out her history, she went to stay with her godmother for school holidays, and it just became her home from home, really. She spent more time there than with her parents who were travelling abroad. So when her former relationship ends badly and she's hurt very much by the person in her past, it's to Thorndale that she retreats to kind of want to begin again, really. She knows that she'll find community there, and she's come from Edinburgh, so it's a big city. It's a different sort of vibe from living in a small village.
Yeah.
But she feels that this is the place that she will find home. And when she meets John, who is somebody with a high profile in Thorndale, she's wary of him, really. I think she understands that here is an attractive man who could cause trouble in her life, and that's not something she wants. So again, he's perhaps looks like a typical hero in some senses, because I did make him tall, dark and handsome, but he also is a character who has a faith, and that's part of the life that he leads and shapes his decisions as well. So it's slightly different.
He's got more dimensions to him than just sort of tall, dark and handsome, as you say. Fantastic. So how hopeful is the book? Because we all need hope at the moment, Suzanne.
I would say it's really hopeful. I write and I read uplifting fiction. I'm unashamedly fond of a happy ending. I don't particularly want to go on a journey, whether that's through a book or a movie, and then end up feeling like, oh, that was the wrong thing at the end. Or it doesn't have to be a happy ever after. It can be a happy for now. But I want to leave something feeling that there is hope for a couple in the future, and that they will perhaps have an opportunity to at least consider a future together, even that's not forever. So yes, I hope it's hopeful. I hope that there is the new beginning in it. She finds a great deal of community and a lot of heart through the people that support one another. And for anyone who wishes to read the book, they'll learn that a lot of what John does is about creating opportunity for young people who may not always have that.
Fantastic. Sounds like you're doing good at the same time, Suzanne. Now let's go on to your other career, plants. Tell us about becoming a horticulturalist. What did it involve? How hard was the course? Because we're all fascinated by it. After lockdown, I got a veg patch. I've now got a big garden. I'm quite obsessed now.
Well, I came to it through having some time. I was a stay-at-home mum for a while. And as my son got older, it frees up a bit more time as they get less dependent. And I spent a lot of time in my garden. Enjoyed growing things. I was just planting seeds, and it just gradually led to an interest in wanting to see, to understand more about how the garden comes together, about how to actually put the components of the garden together. I started growing more flowers than vegetables, more plants, more perennials, more annuals, and I started to think about how I can work those as part of the whole. So I began to think about college and joined an agricultural college because they were offering the course that I wanted. It was about a 50-mile drive. It was in Skipton, so I had this gorgeous drive to the Dales every week during term time, which was a delight, and was just really blessed to have found a great community of people at college. There were young people just setting out on their A-level, after A-levels going into horticulture, some people who were retiring and doing some studying, and then others in between like me who were doing it to get some qualifications and to see where they might take me. I did a practical course. Yeah.
Okay, so tell us, what do they make you go, do they say go out and grow things?
Well, we did that at college because they had a garden. So with it being a practical, it was a mix of literally practical work. So we did things like cuttings and planting seeds, planting a hedge, all those things. They had a garden there. So part of that knowledge was to actually do it, which was wonderful, really thoroughly enjoyable. And luckily they had a greenhouse. So if the weather was atrocious, we'd find something to do in the greenhouse as opposed to in the actual garden. So I did that for the year, thoroughly enjoyed it, and then went back for a second year for a different course, which was a principles of planning, construction and planting, which was much tougher.
Is that more like landscaping or something?
It was, yes. It's not strictly, it's RHS again. It's not strictly garden design. It's not that sort of a course, but it's an introduction to how you might plan a garden, how you might manage a site while you're working on a garden, how to put the components together, how to construction to a point, and also how to plant it, you know, the different things with different planting. There was a lot of, an awful lot to the syllabus, and there was an awful lot of revision. So whilst it was a pleasure to do it and I was grateful for the opportunity, it was hard work. And
not tougher than you thought.
Yes, it was in a way, because I'd left revision behind a long time ago and I was having to sit at home and, you know, get the books out and look at footings for retaining walls and understand how to make a crossfall in a patio and, you know, all of those things and construct fences. So I would say to anybody, if you're thinking of doing it, absolutely do it. But look at the syllabus and
sounds quite mathematical. Sounds like you have to get your geometry good. Yeah,
you do, because we were having to measure plots and, you know, I learned about offsets and triangulation for measuring a plot in a garden. And we use that in our day-to-day job. You know, when I'm planning a garden, I use those methods.
So are you now, as well as being an amazing writer, do you go out and make gardens? What's your title? What do you call yourself?
I would say that I'm more of a planting designer than I am a garden designer. I have designed whole gardens for people.
What's the difference, then?
The difference mainly is that I focus on the planting and the borders in the garden. So I've just done one for a client and it's not finished because the job's extended. We're going on into the spring. They had a huge amount of planting that was very old and quite tired, and they also wanted to create a large new border. So they brought me in to do the border, which we did. And then they looked at the rest of the planting and thought, well, actually, there's a lot more we could do. So it's actually going to end up being about 60 meters worth. Well, the length of the border is about 60 meters from beginning to end. And we are I'm working my way around redesigning. So it's actually been great fun because part of the border is brand new and that was a blank canvas to start from scratch. The rest of it is actually looking at what's there, what can I save, what can I replant, what can I prune, and then what can I add in around it to provide the colour within the context that they're looking for. So planting design is what I do the most of.
Oh, I'm so envious of you, because I think my favourite thing in gardening is sitting there and imagining what I want to put in. You know, it's actually that. Yeah. I enjoy that the most out of all things. In a way, I didn't want it to finish, but then I thought, oh, gardening finishes, but it so doesn't, because you'll always find another gap that needs filling, or you'll find, or the great thing my brother taught me that was a gardener was you can pull something out if you don't like it, and that, or move something, which when I found that out, it really made gardening exciting, you know.
It absolutely does. And if I lose a plant now, which, you know, does still happen, I look at that space now and think, well, actually, that's an opportunity. Mm. If there's something that's gone, what can I do?
That's same here. Okay.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
Yes. It forces you to make a decision where otherwise I might have thought, well, actually, that's doing okay. Let's leave well alone.
No, it's just so thrilling putting something in and then seeing it come out. I honestly, I can't tell you. I think just gardening is literally up there now on my greatest pleasures. And I think...
Oh, that's lovely.
So clever. You've made a career out of it. Anyone that can make money out of something, I'm dead impressed. So tell us about your own garden, Suzanne. Can you describe it on a June summer's day when everything's out? Can you tell us what's in there?
It's full is probably the first thing I'd say. I plant at home more densely than I would for a client. So I always lean towards arts and crafts and cottage style planting, that exuberant, abundant, colourful perennials. I've always been drawn to those. So in my garden, it's small. It's only about 110 square metres. And we have three separate seating areas. That's something I often say to people. Is there a little corner where you can drop a little tiny table and chair where you might, in the sun in the morning, where you want to take a cup of tea outside? We have a tiny little patio that we have breakfast on because that's the sunny bit. We have a shady spot for sitting under a tree for when it's too warm. And we also have a patio that gets the sun in the evening. So that tends to be where we gravitate later on. But you'll find I've got a tiny little pond, literally 2 feet square, which gets frogs and, you know, various other, and that's close to where I have some hostas because that does help. The frogs do help with the slugs. I have I have a wildlife hedge, which is a Cotoneaster francesi Ifred hedge, lots of perennials. So the one thing I did do when I finished my qualifications, I wanted to test myself a little bit with regard to the colour. So I've created the colours of the border to follow the light, if you like. So I have a white border in the shadiest part of the garden, and then that flows through into pinks and purples and mauves, and then it gets to lilacs and then blues and yellows and kind of peach and apricot and red. So I wanted to see if I could get that level of colour through the garden, so that if you like, the hottest border in June is going to have the heleniums. I use some annual dahlias in there. I have a couple of grasses, and then I've got a couple of roses that I've introduced. I've got a phormium that's pink. So I've tried to get this flow of colour that actually goes through, and I think that's really starting to come together nicely.
Oh, it sounds so exciting, honestly. Really, really good. So now let's explore your spirituality. You occasionally lead the worships in your local church. For you, is nature connected to higher things?
Yes, I think I feel that, to be honest. When I'm out walking with my dog, or when I'm in a garden, you know, I do often stop and look up and think, goodness me, this was, you know, this is amazing how this has been created. And I do absolutely love the seasons and that kind of light following dark, if you like, and seeing how things, every year I'm taken aback by perennials that grow back, you know, that season of spring when we start to see things coming afresh. So yes, it is connected for me, and I often find myself sort of throwing my eyes up in praise and saying, wow, this is stunning today, isn't this wonderful?
Lovely. 2020 has been such a difficult year for all of us. How's your faith helped you?
It's been a real backbone. I've had my faith for a long time, probably 30 years now. So it feels like the real backbone to my life, if you like. It's been around for a long time, and it's something that's developed over time. So yes, it's absolutely something that I lean on, and that I feel as it, in a sense, it's changed, because I haven't met with many people from church, just like anybody else, over these past months. It's been so difficult. But it's funny how you can create new opportunities. You know, meeting people via Zoom has become something that we're so familiar with, and it's been an opportunity to connect with people in a different way. In the community where I am as well, it's also been an opportunity to meet other people and support them in a way that perhaps we wouldn't have done.
Yeah, more intimately, I suppose, more intimately than normally. It'd be more formal, yes. Less formal, I suppose.
Yes. And the interesting thing about it as well is that I'm following services online. I mean, as you've mentioned before, I've got quite a bit of experience of leading them in person. And my favourite ones to do are all age worship. And the last service I did was back in February, and it was one where we had a local school in. So we had about 80 people. We had governors and children and, you know, people of all ages. And I really enjoy the challenge of trying to bring something that can help connect, you know, for all of them. But we found that people are watching services online that they wouldn't otherwise have done. You know, some people will enjoy seeing something online and think, oh, maybe church does look like that, as opposed
to broadening people, which is always a good thing.
People are watching things that they perhaps wouldn't have set wanted to come into the building to enjoy,
but yeah, maybe a bit embarrassed, so they're giving it a go. That's why
I think it's an opportunity to do church differently as well.
Yes. Well, that's the whole thing about COVID, is that if we see it as a transforming thing, let's hope that lots of positive things will, and they already are, coming out of it. So yes. What are your hopes and dreams coming forward? I mean, you know, the books are out, the planting's done, the church will be open soon, you know.
I would say the thing for me that I want to keep doing into the future is to be able to keep planting for as long as I can. But and writing really for me is the dream that's been with me since I was a child. I read avidly as a child. All through my life I've read, and I was always just naturally drawn to write. So wanting to write, wanting to create those stories, wanting to find characters. And I have to say, I'm an unashamed romantic as well. I can find the romance in just about anything. So I can always imagine a time when I want to be drawn to create those stories and the characters that I'm writing in my fourth book, which I'm just about at the end, are a little bit older than ones that I've done before. They've both got grown up children, and I've really enjoyed going through a story with couples like that who are at a different stage in their lives to some of the ones I've done previously. So writing, yes.
So writing, as your life evolves, the writing will evolve as well. That's the idea, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, I think it will.
Fantastic. Yes. So The Cottage of New Beginnings by Suzanne Snow is out now and is published by Canello, do I say?
Yes, yes.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous. I'll put your website details on a link. And thank you very much for coming on today.
Thank you, Josephine, for having me. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.